First of all, let's read a couple of verses about Hanuman. First verse, you might possibly be a little surprised, but there is a verse in Bhagavad Gita which is celebrating Hanuman. It is chapter 1, verse 20. Ata vyavastitan drishtva dhartarashtran kapidvaja pravrate shastra sampate danur udyamya pandava rishikesham tadavakyam idam aha mahi pate. Translation. At that time, Arjuna, the son of Pandu, seated in the chariot, bearing the flag marked with Hanuman, took up his bow and prepared to shoot his arrows. O king, after looking at the sons of Dhritarashtra drawn in military array, Arjuna then spoke to Lord Krishna these words. Incidentally, can you hear all right? Better. Oh, okay, very good. Right, so that's a verse. A verse from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 1, verse 20, in which Hanuman is mentioned. Here's another verse. Actually, we read this yesterday. It's quoted in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Bhava Bandha Chite Tasyai Sprihayami namuktaye bhavan prabhor aham dasa iti yatra vilupyate. Hanuman says, I do not desire liberation that cuts the bondage of material life, because in that state of liberation, awareness that you are the master and I am the servant disappears. Bhavan Prabhur, you are the master, aham dasa, and I am the servant. We mentioned a little bit about that yesterday, how Hanuman is just deeply immersed in the mood of the servant. And if someone is deeply immersed in the mood of the servant, means they are deeply immersed in humility. We talked about that more yesterday. But it's very nice feature of the character of Hanuman. Bhavan Prabhur, you are my master, aham dasa, and me, I am the servant. And I don't want any situation of any sort which may interfere with that. Somehow, in one way or another, make me forget that I am just the servant and you are the master. And here's another one. Srinathe Janikinathe Abeda Paramatmani Tatapi Mama Sarva Svam Rama Kamala Lochana. Although he is not different from Lord Narayan, lotus-eyed Lord Ram alone is the be-all and end-all of my life. Yes, so Hanuman is a very special person very special devotee who is completely in that mood of serving. No interest in anything at all of any sort if it interferes with his mood of serving. And we'll tell some of his pastimes today. First of all, his appearance. It's a little complicated. It is somewhat complicated. Oh, was it the previous weekend? Talking about Facebook. And in Facebook, when you write a few things about who you are, what you are, what you do, and what, if you're in a relationship, then one of the possible, like, official answers is, it's complicated. So, the appearance of Hanuman, well, it's complicated. It's really complicated, actually. It's amazing. Because we hear different things. We hear he's the son of Lord Shiva. We hear he is the son of Vayu. In fact, he's famous as the son of Vayu because Bhima of the Pandava brothers, Bhima is famous as the son of Vayu and as Hanuman's brother. So how's it possible? Son of Shiva, son of Vayu, but then he appeared as the son of, well, of Anjana, whose husband's name, what was his name? It begins with K, I forget exactly. The name of the... Khetri. Keturi. Keturi. Yeah, right. Keturi. K-E-T-A-R-I. Yeah. So who's he the son of? Who's he the son of? Shiva, Vayu, Keturi? What's going on? It's a very interesting situation that one time up on Kailash, Lord Shiva and Parvati were engaged in different pastimes together in an affectionate type of mood. And there were some monkeys around. And the two of them became kind of fascinated by these funny monkeys, extraordinary monkeys, became fascinated, and they assumed the form of monkeys, Lord Shiva and Parvati. And in those forms of monkeys, they conceived a child, just conceived a child. Then they returned to their demigod, human demigod forms. And Parvati became anxious. I already had a child who has the head of an elephant. Now I'm going to have one who's a monkey. I don't want this. I'm not going to have this child. So what to do? So Lord Shiva approached Vayu. Lord Shiva is very powerful, influential, transcendental person, very important amongst the demigods. And there are so many pastimes in which he assists different demigods when they're in danger, when they're in difficulty. Lord Shiva does these types of things from time to time. So, he had done a favor to Vayu. So Vayu was sort of owing him a favor in return. So Lord Shiva called for Vayu and said, will you take this embryo of this child, and look after the embryo and see that the embryo is born finally, nicely? And so Vayu said, yes, okay, I'll do that. He was sort of obliged, as we said. So he accepted the embryo. This is Hanuman, of course. So therefore, Shiva is the father, and you could say biological terms, ultimately. But Lord Vayu also is involved, and he looks after the embryo for some time. So Vayu also has a position, something like father. So then the time was going on. The time was going on, and Vayu, understanding that this child is going to be a monkey, thought that I have to give the child to some monkeys. So he went to Kateri, who was the king of the monkeys, and actually gave the embryo almost ready to take birth to the wife of Kateri. And the wife of Kateri was named Anjana. So she accepted the embryo, and then she gave birth to Hanuman eventually. So there, that's the idea. This is how Hanuman is the son of Shiva, the son of Vayu, and then the son of Kateri, and particularly of Anjana. So one name of Hanuman is Anjaneya, the son of Anjana. So there's Hanuman now. He's a young monkey growing up in the palace of Kateri and Anjana. They're monkeys, but they live in a palace, and they speak. They talk in Sanskrit. None of us can talk in Sanskrit, not properly, but they talk in Sanskrit. Yeah, you see, not all monkeys are equal. It's really quite a situation. So, monkeys, though, of course, and maybe especially little monkeys, but in my fairly substantial experience with monkeys, having spent a lot of time in Vrindavan and surrounding areas, is that monkeys are mischievous. And here's Hanuman, he's just a young child monkey. And the young monkeys are definitely mischievous. And you know, all children are mischievous. And we've all been children. So Hanuman was mischievous as a little monkey. There's a number of famous pastimes. When he was small, when he was really small and just starting to eat solid things, then he asked his mother, what can I eat? Hanuman was always hungry. What can I eat? And Anjana said, well, you know, I feed you your three meals a day or like that? And but Hanuman said, no. I want to eat whenever I want to eat. And Anjana said, well, all right, eat some fruit. And Hanuman said, what's fruit? And where is it? And Anjana pointed up into the trees and said, it's up there. And it's usually, it's red, it's yellow. So anything up there which is red or yellow, something like that, you can eat. Oh, okay, that's good. Hanuman looked up into the tree, and through the leaves of the tree, he saw the sun. Which, of course, is red, yellow, something like that. And Hanuman thought, ah, there's a fruit, a nice big round fruit, effulgent fruit. So Hanuman went flying into the sky. Hanuman has many mystical powers. Actually, he has many, many powers of different sorts. So one is that he can fly easily. So he flew into the sky, grabbed the sun, and put it in his mouth, and closed his mouth. The whole universe became dark. Actually, Rahu, the demoniac celestial being, who's always regularly attacking the sun, attacking the moon, and these attacks, they are eclipses. So he saw that here's Hanuman. Hanuman grabbed the sun, and so Rahu wanted to get in there. So he came flying over just as Hanuman was about to put the sun in his mouth. And Hanuman grabbed him and put him in his mouth also, and closed his mouth. The whole universe became dark. At the time, Indra was having a temple council meeting, or universe council meeting, in his palace. And suddenly, in the middle of the meeting, everything became dark. That's like celestial load shedding. Sure. Following in the footsteps of the South African government, we're in good company. So the whole universe became dark, and Indra is the king of the demigods. Of course, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva are above him. They're way above him, actually. Just to give a little idea, there are 13 Shivas. I mean, not 13, 13 Indras. 13 Indras in one day of Brahma. One day. And Brahma and Shiva, they live for 100 of Brahma's years. Each day, the daylight part of the day is 12 hours, and each year is 365 days, and Brahma lives 100 years. But each day there are 13 Indras and all the other administrative demigods running the universe. So that gives a little perspective on what is the position of someone like Indra, or the others like Yamaraj, Surya, all these other Vayu, all these other demigods, in relation to Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. Yes, so Indra, he became disturbed. What are we going to do? There's something is seriously wrong in the universe. How are we going to light up things? And Indra said that whoever it was who took the sun, they're over in that direction somewhere. Hanuman had gone jumping off in that direction. They saw him. So Indra thought, the sun is somehow or other not functioning, but we have my thunderbolt, his vajra, lightning bolt, which of course gives off light. And he said, I will throw my lightning bolt in the direction of that being who, it seems, has had something to do with the disappearance of the sun. So let's let my lightning bolt light things up, and then maybe we'll see what's happened to the sun. So he threw his lightning bolt, and it came flying towards Hanuman and hit Hanuman in the mouth and broke one of his teeth. And therefore Hanuman has the name Hanuman, which means he who has a broken tooth. Yeah. He who has a broken tooth. Now you can imagine that, you know, suddenly Hanuman's there, everything's fine, and suddenly smash, he gets attacked very strongly and one of his teeth just gets broken. Having a broken tooth, that's not good, is it? I hate breaking my teeth. So he got angry. He got really angry. Who is this who's broken my tooth? And he grabbed the thunderbolt. And Indra came and but it's everything's still dark. So Indra approached Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma gathered all the demigods, and they all went to visit Hanuman to ask for the sun back. And this is really, it's quite something, this whole event. So they approached Hanuman. First of all, Lord Brahma, who's an extremely impressive person. And Lord Brahma asked Hanuman, my dear monkey, will you kindly give the sun back? And Hanuman just point blank refused. You know, you guys, you broke my tooth. And now you come and ask me for favors. No chance. He refused. So then the demigods had another meeting, and they decided, let us try to negotiate, make a settlement. We'll give you this, you give us that. You know what it's like negotiating. So Lord Brahma approached Hanuman that we really want the sun back. If you'll give us, I tell you what, I will give you a special blessing if you give us the sun back. And Hanuman said, yeah, what are you going to give me? And Brahma said, you can live as long as me. That for 100 years of Lord Brahma. That's so much longer than Indra and all the regular demigods live. By our calculation, 311 trillion, 40 billion of our years, give or take a few billion. You can live as long as me. And Hanuman replied, interesting, but I'm not really that impressed. I'm keeping the sun. So then Agni approached him and said, I bless you. That fire, because Agni is the demigod of fire, I bless you. That fire will never burn you. Later, and we'll mention a bit about that, that becomes a very important point in one of Hanuman's very important pastimes, when he set Lanka on fire, but he didn't get burnt, because Agni, who is the demigod of fire and who has a body of fire, but is never burnt by fire, he gave him that blessing, that fire will never burn you. Then Indra gave a blessing. You will become as famous as me. You'll become as famous as me. Vayu gave a blessing. You will be as fast as me, as fast as the wind. But Hanuman was not cooperating. Hanuman was not cooperating. So Lord Brahma conferred with Brihaspati, who's the spiritual master of the demigods, that, you know, when you do a negotiation with someone, there must be something they want. And if you can understand what they want and then offer it to them, then there's a good chance you'll get what you want. Because, you know, if they're not willing to make a deal, why would they bother being in a negotiation at all? So Lord Brahma told Brihaspati, I will read his mind. So Lord Brahma read Hanuman's mind. And you know what he found out? What was Hanuman thinking about? Tell me. Fruit. Hanuman was thinking of fruit, because that was his program. He had wanted fruit. So Brihaspati told Hanuman, I will give you all the fruit in the world. And I'll give you the knowledge of Ayurveda, by which you will know all the fruits and all the qualities and characteristics of all the fruits, and of all, not all, just all the roots, but of all the plants and trees and herbs and anything that grows, and what potencies these things have, all of them. Any plant, anything which grows in the universe, you'll know it, you'll know what is the use of it, and you'll know what is the medicinal effect of it. And now Hanuman's really quite interested. He's very interested, actually. And then Dhanvantari, but he wasn't quite there. Dhanvantari came forward and said that, I bless you, that you will know what medicine to put on anyone, including people who are dead, and you'll be able to bring them back to life. And then Hanuman said, oh, all right then. And he opened his mouth, and they got the sun back. Yes. So Hanuman, he's a real character. But as we said, he was mischievous. He was very mischievous, as monkeys are and as children are, mischievous. This famous story, how Hanuman not exactly lost his powers, because he was extremely powerful. You know, he jumped right up, flew through the universe, and put the sun in his mouth, and didn't just get burnt to ashes on the spot. Very powerful. But Hanuman, he didn't actually lose his power. He forgot about his power. For a long time, he forgot. Even though he was very prominent in the monkey community, but he forgot about his power. So he was very mischievous. He liked to play practical jokes on people and do little funny little things to sort of mock people and jokes at people's expenses, that type of thing. So not far from the palace of his parents, there was one sage living. A very saintly person living in what is more or less a small dwelling, like a hut basically, or maybe a larger hut. And the hut had a front door and a back door. And every morning when the sage would get up, the first thing he'd do would be go out the back door and just down the way and pass stool and urine. Haribol. This was his program. And Hanuman, you know, he would get around here and there. He knew everyone and he knew everything that was going on. So he knew the sage and he knew what the sage's program was. Every morning he would get up and go out the back door, and then down and pass stool and urine. So one day, Hanuman, he grabbed a tiger and an elephant. Like we said, he's very powerful. He just grabbed a tiger and an elephant. The tiger, he tied up just behind the back door. Just behind the back door of the sage's little dwelling. And the elephant, he tied up just outside the front door. So, bright and early in the morning, the sage got up and, okay, stretch, and what's now? Okay, out the back door to pass stool and urine. He opened the back door. There's this tiger. Bang! He just closed the door. What is going on? Anyway, I'll try and sneak out the front door. I hope he doesn't see. So, okay, now he goes to the front door, opens the front door. There's this elephant. Oh, no! So he was trapped. But the call, but nature was calling very sweetly and strongly. Come on. Come on. to the point where he couldn't manage. He just couldn't manage. And right at that point, Hanuman came on the scene, released the tiger and the elephant, and opened the door and said, "Ha ha, joke's on you." But this sage was not in the mood for joking. He was just not in the mood. So he cursed Hanuman. He cursed Hanuman that you will forget your power. You've got so much power, controlling tigers and elephants and doing so many things. You've got so much power, but I curse you, forget your power. And Hanuman, of course, he became very apologetic and begged forgiveness. Please, please let me remember my power. And the sage said, all right, in the future when you really need it, then some people will remind, they'll just remind you that actually you're extremely powerful. And then you'll remember, oh yes. And then you'll be able to utilize that power. Until then, sorry. So like this, Hanuman's mischievousness got sort of curtailed to some degree at least, to some degree. Not completely. So anyway, now he became a little more sort of peaceful, and he wouldn't just roam around here and there and making mischief and causing some trouble. He would stay more just around the palace. And one day, who should come but Narada Muni? Narada Muni arrived on the scene. Because Hanuman, now he's still young, but he's a few years older, and Hanuman developed a reputation as a singer. In fact, he was such an amazing singer that sometimes when he sang, if he really got into it, sometimes when he sang, rocks would melt. I don't know if any of you, when they sing, rocks melt? Your mother? No? Not yet? But sometimes rocks would melt when Hanuman would sing. So Narada Muni, who's a great singer and musician, of course, Narada Muni heard about this. And Narada Muni thought, oh, I want to meet this Hanuman. I really want to meet him, and I want to hear him sing. I really want. So Narada Muni arrived there one day. And there, just by the palace, not far away, just right by the palace, was Hanuman playing around on his own, not really getting up to mischief. So in came Narada Muni, and Hanuman saw Narada Muni, and he'd heard, of course, of Narada Muni, and he offered him obeisances and glorified Narada Muni and asked, how can I serve you? And Narada Muni said, you know, there's just one thing I really want from you. I really want to hear you sing. Will you sing for me? And Hanuman said, yes, of course I'll sing for you. No problem. Please have a seat. Just sit down and relax. Put your veena, His stringed instrument looks kind of like a sitar, sort of, to some degree. Just put your vina on the rocks here, and you sit, and I'll sing. And Hanuman started singing. And he was so blissful because Narada Muni is here, this important, great, great devotee, real VIP. Not like, you know, some of us, very, very insignificant person. But then he's a really very important person. So Hanuman, God, he was super inspired. And he sang some Ram Bhajan so beautifully. Narada Muni is just overwhelmed. All I've heard about his singing is true. So Hanuman's singing. Narada Muni is just in ecstasy. And he didn't notice that the rock just behind him, which his veena was standing on, the rock had started melting because of Hanuman's singing. And the veena, you know, the rock didn't just melt and just become liquid, but it became soft, and then it became more soft, and then really soft, and the veena started sinking into the rock, further and further, slowly in, as Hanuman was singing and singing, until it was just like really inside the rock. And Hanuman is singing, and Narada is listening and is in ecstasy. Somehow or other, Narada just happened to turn around, somehow, to looking in the direction where the rock was, where his veena was, and he saw, my veena has sunk, you know, like a couple of feet or so into this rock. And Narada Muni panicked. Stop! Stop singing! Now! Please stop! And Hanuman was shocked. What? What happened? My veena! But of course the problem now was that Hanuman had stopped singing, so the melting stopped, and the rock just became rock again, just like that. It solidified around Narada's veena. And Narada, then he saw that. Oh, So he got up and tried to take the veena out, but he couldn't take the veena out. It was caught. It was just too badly caught. So Narada Muni asked Hanuman, could you please sing again? Just for a moment or two, please. And Hanuman said, what? Sing again? What do you think I am? First you ask me to sing, so I sing. Then you shout at me and tell me to stop, so I stop. And now you ask me to sing again. What do you think I am? No, I'm not going to sing again. You treat me like that? I'm not singing again. Forget it. And Hanuman got up and went walking towards the palace with Narada Muni following. Hanuman, gee, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean it. It was just such a shock. I didn't expect it. I've never seen it before. I'm sorry. Could you please just come back and sing again? No. Don't you treat me like that. Ordering me around. And so now they entered into the palace. And they went into one room. And again, Narada is following Hanuman. And Hanuman told him, please go away. Please just leave me alone. But Narada wouldn't do that. So Hanuman went from one room, he went into the next room. Please leave me. I'm trying to get away from you. But no, please come and sing again. No, just leave me alone. So Hanuman went into the next room. And Narada followed. And Hanuman said, please go, will you? Leave me. And Hanuman went around all the rooms on the ground floor of the palace. But Narada wouldn't leave him. So Hanuman went upstairs. And he went from room to room. With Narada following him, begging him, and apologizing to him. And Hanuman saying, listen, I'm trying to just, will you leave me? But he'd go into the next room and Narada wouldn't leave him. Finally, they went into every room in the palace. And then Anjana, Hanuman's mother, came. And here's Narada, this famous, great, saintly person. And he's in terrible anxiety. And Hanuman's just treating him like, in a very offhand way. So Anjana said to Hanuman, what are you doing? Don't treat this great devotee like this. If he wants you to sing, you sing. All right? And Hanuman said, yes, Mataji. No problem. The thing is, though, that I wanted to get the dust of his lotus feet right throughout our palace. So I've taken him into every room just to get the dust from his feet in every room. And now we've done it. Now I'll go out and sing again. So he did. He went back out, sang again, and the rock melted again, and Narada Muni got his veena back. Sure, I tell you, don't play with Hanuman too much. Oh my gosh. You can get into serious trouble. Talking about getting into serious trouble, Well, you know the story that Hanuman only appears in Ramayana, in Ram Leela, immediately after Sita Devi has been kidnapped. Then just, I think, the same day, Hanuman appears on the scene and meets Lord Ram and Lakshman. But Lord Ram is in just an incredible state of devastation. And Hanuman couldn't really speak with him much. So he was interacting with Lakshman. And so Hanuman said that we live here in this area, we know the area, and now Sita has been kidnapped. We will find her, because we know the area. We know everywhere in this area, so we will find her. And Lakshman said, oh, that's really nice. Ram will be so happy if you can find her. Please do. But now the problem is, that Hanuman, that Sita has been kidnapped before Hanuman appeared on the scene. Hanuman has never seen Sita. So he asked Lakshman, okay, we'll find her. We'll find her, no problem. Just tell us, what does she look like? So we can identify her, recognize her. And Lakshman said, I don't know what she looks like. And Hanuman was, you know, obviously very taken aback and said, but you've been living together for the last, all getting on for 14 years. You're together 24 hours a day, generally. So please, just tell me what she looks like. And Lakshman said, no, I can't. I don't know what she looks like. And Hanuman became a little disturbed that I am trying to help you. I'm trying to help you to find Sita. Please tell me what she looks like. And Lakshman said, I don't know. I don't know. Because I've never looked above her feet. And then Lakshman gave Hanuman very detailed and beautiful description of the lotus feet of Mother Sita, including the markings on the soles of her feet, underneath her feet. There are specific markings of different items. And Lakshman, who was practically constantly watching her feet, he knew what her feet looked like. And he gave this detailed description to Hanuman. So then shortly after, when Hanuman jumped across to Lanka, because they were given a report that Ravana had taken Sita to Lanka. So Hanuman jumped over, and he had to look around, but eventually he found Sita in the Ashok Grove, and he had Ram's ring, which Sita recognized. But, you know, there are many rings, and, you know, it's easy to make copies of rings. That's not difficult at all. So when Hanuman met Sita, but he didn't know for sure who she was, she identified the ring. That was one thing. But then he looked at her feet, and he could understand. These are the lotus feet of Mother Sita. Because you can make a copy of a ring, but you can't make a copy of the soles of anyone's feet, actually, but particularly the soles of the lotus feet of Mother Sita, because they have these amazing markings of like an elephant goad, a fish, and various other things like that, specific items. So, yes, so he jumped over to Lanka. Well, you know, there are many famous stories, of course. There's the famous story of Hanuman and the spider, which was just before that, which is an important story. You could learn an important lesson from it, that they're building the bridge to Lanka, And Hanuman and his monkey friends and the bears, they're collecting boulders and even mountain peaks and then bringing them down by the ocean, throwing them in, and they would float. And this way they're making the bridge. Just an interesting little aside. Last time I visited Port Elizabeth, sure, was it this lifetime? But anyway, it's been a long time. I was at one devotee family's house, and the youngest son, he was sort of 8, 9, maybe something like that. And I just happened to look. They have a swimming pool just outside the lounge, and I just looked out. And I saw these rocks in the bottom of the pool. You know, like the sort of this size. Not just pebbles and things, but more like real rocks. And I looked and I saw they had the name Ram written on them. And this son, one of the two sons, such a nice little boy, he said, you know, I just cannot understand it. I just cannot understand it. I'm writing the name Ram on the rocks, and I'm throwing them into the swimming pool, and when I do, I call out, Ram, 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 but they don't float. Seriously, I'm completely serious. And he was a bit disturbed about this. Why won't they float? Why did they float when they were building the bridge? So I had to say, well, you know, Hanuman, he's on a higher level than us. And the boy agreed, yeah, okay, I guess so. So, and you know, during the course of that, Hanuman went from way down there in South India. He went up to Vraj Mandala, and he was going to lift Govardhan Hill and take Govardhan Hill down to South India and throw the hill in the ocean to form part of the bridge. But just as Hanuman was about to lift the Govardhan Hill, a voice came from the sky that the bridge is finished. We don't need any more rocks or mountain peaks or anything. So he left Govardhan. He didn't pick up Govardhan. And Govardhan was disappointed. And Lord Ram knew that. So on the way back to Ayodhya, after freeing Sita, killing Ravan, Lord Ram stopped at Govardhan Hill and spoke to Govardhan and said, don't worry, don't worry. Next time I appear, I will lift you myself. Personally, and then I will walk on you personally every day. And Govardhan was satisfied. So when Krishna appeared, he did like that. Right, so but Hanuman and the spider, so Hanuman and all these big monkeys and bears, they're throwing these boulders and mountain peaks in the ocean, they're floating. And there was one spider. And he was a devotee. And he also wanted to help. Because that's what being a devotee means. If there is something to do for the Lord, if someone is a devotee, they will get involved in doing it. That's a devotee. If there's service to be done, the devotee will be right there. Others may say, yeah, okay, sure. You know, I hope you find someone to help. So the spider, he was into it. He was a small spider. I mean, there's not many big spiders. He was really a small spider also. So he was picking up just little grains of sand and just sort of throwing them a couple of few millimeters or something along those lines. But as far as he was concerned, he was serving his Lord. And he was happy doing that. But the problem was that Hanuman and the other monkeys and bears, they are running up and down with boulders and mountain peaks, etc. And sometimes they would almost step on the spider. And it became a sort of a nuisance. Watch out for the spider. Oh, almost got him. Yeah, so, you know, had to dodge around, and it kind of broke the momentum of the operation. So Hanuman spoke to the spider and said, listen, I know you want to help, but if you really want to help, the best way you can help is by not helping. Just stay out of the way, all right, and let us do the real service. And the poor spider was disappointed and crying, but Lord Ram heard that. And he chastised Hanuman that this spider was serving me just as much as you were, according to his capacity. So don't you speak to him like that. And this is something we have to bear in mind. Different devotees are on different levels, physically, intellectually, and in all sorts of ways. Everyone's an individual. But it's not just a matter of who can do some big thing. It's really a matter of the state of the heart. So a devotee who, due to whatever physical or intellectual circumstances and all these types of considerations, some devotee may only be able to do less than another devotee, quantitatively, but the Lord accepts the service in terms of the sincerity of heart. And not just in some quantitative terms. So that's an interesting little story. Then, then Hanuman jumped over. I mean, that's a bit of a long story too. As he jumped over, when he took off from the India side, Rameshwaram Island, he chanted the name Ram, and the idea was just one time, Ram. And when he landed in Lanka, he would pronounce the M. But while flying, it's just Ram when he gets to the end. But he got interrupted on the way. There's a number of people tried to stop him, and he had to speak to them. But he didn't speak to them through his mouth, because he was saying Ra, and this one time Ram, he spoke to them through the pores of his body. Hanuman has many unusual powers. Anyway, then he landed, and he's trying to find Sita. Where's Sita? It was late. Where is Sita? And he went into Ravana's palace. Ravana had 12,000 wives. And he was trying to find Ravana. Eventually he found Ravana. And he couldn't believe how beautiful Ravana was. Incredibly beautiful person physically. Ravana was sleeping. Anyway, but then he thought, no, I'm not going to just kill him while he's asleep. We warriors don't do that, and Ram wants to do that. So my mission is to find Sita. So off he went to find Sita. And he found Sita. And, you know, with the ring, by seeing her the bottoms of her feet, he understood, this is Sita. And he thought, he told Sita, you know, I can just carry you back. Why don't I just take you back? And that's it. It's all done. But then he thought, no. Ram wants to do that. So I don't want to take some special part of Ram's mission for myself. So he thought, no, okay, I won't do that. I'll go back now. But before I go, you know, I'm a monkey. Let me do some mischief. So he started smashing the grove of trees. The Ashokvan started smashing the trees. And the word spread that there's someone, some enemy is in the Ashok grove smashing it. So Ravana sent different people. None of them returned. Yeah. None of them returned. So eventually, and it is a bit of a long story actually, but we don't want to take too much time. Eventually he sent one of his main generals. So this big soldier went down. Really big, powerful soldier went down and confronted Hanuman. That, who are you? And Hanuman didn't say that I am Hanuman. Hanuman just said, I am the servant of Ram. And then that general started saying bad things about Ram, criticizing, mocking type things about Lord Ram. And when you're in the company of Hanuman, you must know, you never do things like that. You just never do things like that at all. And so Hanuman became really disturbed. And this general, he spoke in a particular way, had a particular way of enunciating his words. And he would open his mouth. He wouldn't, you know, sort of mumble as some people do. When he spoke, he really opened his mouth wide and pronounced very nicely and that sort of thing. And as he was speaking, saying nasty things about Lord Ram, Hanuman was just about to kill him. But then suddenly, Hanuman felt a great call of nature. We came across a situation like that earlier, didn't we? This is a little different. He just had to urinate. He just had to. That was all there was to it. No room for negotiation. And this general is speaking with his mouth open wide. And Hanuman couldn't stop himself. He urinated in the man's mouth. And this general was suddenly just shocked. He couldn't believe it. You know, he'd encountered many enemies and he fought with them in the past. But never had he met an enemy who urinated in his mouth. So he just didn't know what to do. He became bewildered and he ran back to Ravan and he reported back, "Yes, my lord, there is a monkey there. It's a monkey who's destroying the Ashoka Grove." And Ravan said, "Okay, you killed him." And the general said, "No, I didn't." And Ravana said, "Well, what happened then? He urinated in my mouth." "What?" So anyway, then Hanuman allowed himself to be caught, actually. And it's a long story. They tied some cloth to his tail and put some sort of spirits or something on it and lit it. So Hanuman then went jumping all around the city and burnt the whole city. But because he had that blessing from Agni, he didn't get burnt. His body was not hurt at all, but Lanka was just inflamed. So then he got back and he explained to Lord Ram, "Yes, I found Sita. She's in this particular place and, you know, she's okay. And Lord Ram said, "Did you meet any of them?" And Hanuman said, "Yeah, I met this general." "Oh, okay. Did you fight with him?" "No. I urinated in his mouth." "What? Hanuman, he's a Kshatriya, you don't do that." And Hanuman said, "Yeah, well, he's a Kshatriya, I'm a monkey. And we do things like this." Anyway, you know, the rest is history, isn't it? The rest is history. And Hanuman is still there. He's still on the planet, somewhere in the Himalayas or somewhere. He's still there, waiting for Ram to return. Yeah. So, okay, devotees, there's some little pastimes of Sri Hanuman. And he's such an emblem of service to the Lord. Humility, deep humility as a servant of the Lord, ready to do anything. If it pleases the Lord, if the Lord wants it, he is just ready to do it. He would love to do it, even some very humble type of service. In this way, he's a great example for all of us, to be willing to do service. If the Lord wants it, if the devotees want it, then we will make it our life and soul. This is the mood of Hanuman. So there you go, devotees. Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki. Oh, and just, yeah, last thing. The powers. He got reminded. Jambavan reminded him, because Jambavan knows really a lot of historical things, because he's been around since the beginning of the universe. So there was this whole discussion, who's going to jump to Lanka? And different of them were offering that, well, like Angada, I could jump there, but I wouldn't be able to make it back. Or Jambavan said, when I was young, I could jump there and back, but I'm old now, I can't do it. And Hanuman's just there like, yeah, okay, you guys decide who of you's going to do it. And Jambavan, knowing the situation, told Hanuman, listen, Hanuman, you've forgotten, but you can do it. You remember, you can do it. You can do it. You have the power. And then suddenly, it's like someone turned on the switch. Hanuman said, yeah, I can do it. I'll do it. And he did it. Sri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki. Sri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki. Sri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki. Gaur Premanande.
Thank you very much, Maharaj, for that wonderful lecture and for telling us so much about the interesting pastimes of Hanuman. Some of them we haven't known before, especially me, so thank you very much for sharing that, Maharaj. Maharaj, we have a few questions. And this time it's not the pizzas, but there's 5 questions in total today.
Okay.
So let me just go with the first question. Maharaj, I heard that when Krishna had shown a pastime somewhere in the material world, then immediately after he has shown it in one place, he begins the same pastime somewhere else.
Right.
In the material world. If the demons are achieving liberation, who accepts the role of the demons as the pastime continues?
Well, you know, Prabhupada talks about, I mean, this sort of idea, because, you know, a lot of these demons, they make repeat performances again and again. You know, at Kamsa, Hiranyakashipu, Ravana, and then again and again and again and again. Different living entities are placed in those roles. Different living entities. It's not the same demon, again, the same actual jiva soul. But different jivas are taking the same type of role. So there are variations in the pastimes, because each demon is a separate person. And they may have, because of their karma and everything, a very similar nature to, you know, the one who was in that role previously. But there are differences also in their characters and personalities. Therefore, there are variations in the pastimes with persons who have the same names and do, you know, have very similar but not the same natures, and do very similar and sometimes the same things, but it's not actually the same person. Does that make sense?
Yes, Maharaj. Thank you for that. Maharaj, the next question is, why is it that when we lose something, we are told we can pray to Hanuman to help us find it? Why is it that when we lose something, we are told we can pray to Hanuman to find it?
I think that's a mental speculation. At least I can say I've not heard that before. Sounds like sort of karma kandya, getting our material positions back. So I wouldn't get into that. I won't go any further than that with that one.
Okay, Maharaj. Next question, Maharaj, is what does Narad Muni look like? When he travels around the universe, does he travel with any companions?
What does he look like? I don't have a photo. But, you know, there are pictures in Prabhupada's books. There's a number of pictures of Narada Muni. And Prabhupada approved those pictures. So, you know, they must at least be reasonable approximations of what he looks like. So if you really want to know or get an idea, have a look in Prabhupada's books. And what was the second part?
So the second part is, does he travel with any companions?
Oh, yeah. You know, sometimes, but often alone. I mean, generally he travels alone, at least in the pastimes which we have descriptions of. In the majority of cases, he travels alone, but not always. Sometimes he travels with Parashara Muni. Sometimes he travels with Angira Muni. These are other big Munis. He's Narada Muni. These are other Munis, great sages. Like in, it's the pastime with Mrigari the hunter. He's with Parashara Muni. The pastime with Chitraketu. Is it Angira?
Yes.
Is it Angira? Okay. Yeah, so he's with Angira Muni. So sometimes he's with other sages, but the majority of times that I'm aware of or that we read of, he's on his own.
Thank you, Maharaj. Two more to go, Maharaj.
Okay.
Maharaj, can you please tell us the pastime why Lakshman decided he would be Ram's older brother in all future incarnations of pastime?
That's a long story. But basically the essence of it was that Lakshman felt frustrated because he felt, and arguably it was like that from a certain perspective, that he felt that Lord Ram made some very crucial bad decisions which when those situations arose, these three situations, one was the time of the kidnapping, the other was the time of making Sita walk through fire after she was released, and the third time was putting her into exile. So Lakshman, in his mind, on each of those three occasions, Lakshman, as far as he was concerned, he had a much better idea than Ram, and Ram had like a really faulty idea. So, therefore, Lakshman decided, he didn't say anything out loud because he's the younger brother, but in his mind he made up his resolve, you could say, next time I'm going to be the older brother. Because, we're not going to have repeats of all these unfortunate decisions. And so next time he appeared as Lord Balaram. And the following time, after that, he appeared as Lord Nityananda, who's even more senior, 20 years older, approximately.
Thank you, Maharaj. And then the final question is, how do we ensure we are following, not imitating? How do we ensure that we are following, not imitating?
Well, basically we should follow the instructions. That's a pretty good, a pretty important thing. And when there's a question of sort of following in the footsteps, doing something similar, then it would be good to take advice. It would be good to take advice. If you have to do something which is like something which was done by whoever the person, the greater person was, like with Prabhupada. I remember, I wasn't exactly in the room, but I was just nearby, and we were told afterwards how some people, couple came to visit Prabhupada in Bhaktivedanta Bhavan in 1973, and Prabhupada preached to them for a while, and at the end, he told them that, you know, you two, you're just like cats and dogs. And the young people agreed, yes, you're right. And then they left, like, immediately. And Prabhupada turned to the devotees and said, I can say things like that, but you may not be able to. Yeah. So, therefore, you know, in such situations, it's a good idea to take advice rather than just do something which may be imitative. But otherwise, follow the instructions, serve the instructions, and glorify the person. You can't go wrong like that.